You're listening to the Script Lab Podcast. I'm Shani Edwards.
Today I talk to Don Lubbe and Jocelyn DeBoer, the writers, directors, and stars of the deranged surreal comedy Greener Grass. Let's hear a clip.
Kim-Ann. You would tell me if I did something to upset you, right? Okay.
You did something to upset me.
I did?
Honestly, I just can't believe everything that happened with your baby.
Oh.
You just gave your baby to Lisa. That's really fucked up, Jill.
You know, I think I made a horrible mistake.
Yeah. Why would you give your baby to Lisa and not me?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Kim-Ann. I wasn't thinking, you know. I hadn't planned on giving my baby away at all.
Well,
you know, if it makes you feel any better, I really miss Madison. Paige.
You know, I would have kept her name Madison if you had given her to me. That was my mother's name.
I know, that's who I named her after.
No. Really? Oh my God.
Hi, Dawn and Jocelyn.
I'm Jocelyn.
And I'm Dawn.
Hi. So we're here today to talk about this fabulous comedy. It's called Greener Grass, starring the two of you, as well as directed and written by the two of you, right? So we'll get into the movie in a minute. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about how you guys met and started writing, acting, and directing.
Yes. So Jocelyn and I met back in 2011. We were put on a house sketch team at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
In New York.
In New York, yes. And that was when we met, and we were performers on this team for about 4 years together there. And our team was so, so close. It was called Onassis. And they truly were kind of like our New York comedy family. And through being on that group with Jocelyn, I feel like we often found ourselves pitching sketches of things kind of in a similar vein, and we were really like fascinated by finding comedy and the drama of the mundane, and interested in sketches revolving around domesticity, and I guess when in 2013, Jocelyn moved out to LA, and I followed a year later in 2014. And that was a time in which we were sort of the only two people from that sketch group out in LA. And we decided it would be fun to work on something together. And that's when we made the Greener Grass short film.
So tell me about the short. So how long was it? Did it go to festivals? Was it similar to the movie?
Absolutely. The short film, it truly took on a life of its own. It had an incredible festival run. We premiered at the Clermont-Ferrand Festival in France, which was just such an amazing experience for us because we had never been to a film festival before. And this festival is attended by, I want to say like 20,000 people come in or something insane. Yeah. And it's all short films. And I think it wasn't very common for actors to come to the festival because people recognize us from our movie and then would start following us around the town, particularly French teenagers in hordes would, you know, come into coffee shops we were in, et cetera. And we thought it was particularly funny that they would often have braces and like tap on a window and point their braces at us. And then we would smile and then their faces would fall like, oh, you don't actually have braces. And we'd be like, no. And one of our favorite things in France was we were just eating sandwiches one day on a park bench, and this, you know, quite older couple came over to us, and they obviously like didn't speak much English at all, but they got very close to us, locked eyes, and then proceeded to pretend to throw up. And then walked away giving us a thumbs up. And that was because in our short film, the women eat sandwiches and then and with our husbands, and we all throw them up. And so France was a great experience. And then it was just off from there, we won an award at South by Southwest, and then it continued to play around the country. And it was truly life-changing for us because we, you know, knew after all of that that we, you know, desperately wanted to be filmmakers.
Well, that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what year was the short?
The short, we shot it in 2015, and it was on the festival circuit in 2016.
Great. So when did you guys decide you wanted to make it a feature, or was that the plan the whole time?
No, it was not the plan at all when we made the short film. And, you know, I think after the short was did so well on the festival circuit and, you know, people were so excited by the idea of it, there was some interest in us developing it as a TV show. So in 2017, we ended up selling the idea as a TV show to IFC. And we spent about 6 months or so developing the pilot with them and had just the best experience working with the creative team over there. And that was when we really started thinking about expanding this world of greener grass and like really delving more into the characters and these themes and this the world outside of the soccer field. And towards the end of 2017, we, you know, had like probably our third draft of this very, very ambitious and expensive pilot. And it just was a bit bigger in scope than IFC was able to do at the time, along with, you know, a few other factors that the TV show ended up not working out. And so at that point, it was almost this relief because when you are working on a TV show, you have to really build out like 6 seasons of ideas, and there's no end point that you can plan on. And it when we sort of got to that point, we decided to take this idea and make it into a feature, which we just went back to watching the short, and we kind of realized how beautiful the simplicity of it was. And that was when we started making a 90-minute version.
So how did you get the money?
You know, we have a sole investor, which is beyond fortunate for us, because this is someone who was a fan of our short films and our comedy work prior to that, that gave us, you know, of course we had a limited independent budget, but it gave us, you know, a fixed amount of money and said, like, this is yours. And we had complete creative control over the project.
Wow.
Which we will be grateful for the rest of our lives, because we, of course, it's been such an honor to have people coming, seeing the movie, and then claiming that it's like so unique and like nothing they've ever seen before. And we feel like that would have never been able to happen were we to have to pitch this movie to studios and drum up financing for it.
So did you go to the investor and say, hey, we're in this situation, or was that on the table?
It was already on the table. Yeah.
Wow. That's, I've never.
We're the luckiest people on earth, yeah. Truly. Yeah.
I've interviewed a lot of screenwriters and never have I heard that. Congratulations.
One of the things that the investor in particularly cited about our work was that we worked in obviously in our short films, a very formalist style, and it's extremely detail-oriented, and we put so much of our effort into the production value, yet we were able to make those projects with, in their opinion, incredibly low budgets for what they looked like. So I think that's interesting as a filmmaker to hear that, like, one of the things that drew them, they're like, oh, if you can do this with this amount of money, let me give you this and try to make a feature. And we did.
That's great. So what was the biggest challenge of making the film?
Probably the budget.
yeah. It all comes back to that, I think. Honestly, there was a few points, I think, when we were in pre-pro where we were like, this, we need to just table this and raise more money, because we have champagne tastes on a beer budget. And it was so important to us that the look of our world be very, you know, as Jocelyn mentioned, formalist and stylized and have... And that costs a lot of money.
And not to mention giving all the adults in the movie bracelets is extremely expensive. We had a very large cast, 17 different locations, yada, yada, you know.
Yeah. And we were chatting with our department heads, in particular, Lauren Oppold, our costume designer, and Lee Poindexter, our production designer. And they had such confidence that they could... make our vision come to life within the budget we had, and they did wonders. Like,
they are so resourceful, and but truly their blood, sweat, and tears is on every frame of this movie. And yeah. So while we were all in the trenches together, and truly we feel like the four of us are locked for life in terms of a directing and designer team, we don't want to ever put them through that kind of a low budget again.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the braces. So how much roughly does it cost to put braces, fake braces, on an actor?
More than we knew.
I know. I want to say it was roughly $400 a pair.
For the materials alone. And yes. Then we had the special effects artist, incredibly accomplished artist from New York, Adam Bailey, living down in Georgia with us, which of course is another added expense to pay for his time and his housing.
And the additional expense of it, we needed the actors to be there 48 hours in advance in order to have time to make the mold. So it's just, all of that adds up. And so I think it was the biggest line item in our movie.
Wow. And so in your mind, what do the braces represent? Are they just like a style accoutrement? Are they just trying to improve themselves?
You know, the braces first came about in the short film. That was, it was always a part of the story. And the original idea came from it. Don and I, we were, you know, trying to shoot this really simple short film where it was going to be just the two of us, soccer moms on the bleachers. And we were saying to each other, like, well, we want to make sure that if one of our comedy friends opens this and, you know, nothing so, like, hard jokes are happening within the first minute, we want them to know this is an unusual world. And so we thought, well, we're pitching different options, like, well, what if both the women have braces? And then we locked on that because we were so excited about the symbolism of it, that braces are this mess when they're on your face and they're so painful, yet they project the promise of future perfection. And we thought, how perfect for these suburban women. And then when we decided to make the feature, we just knew that we wanted every adult in this world to have it because of the theme of conformity in our movie and all of these people who are in pain and striving so hard to project perfection.
Sure. Gosh. So at moments, I was thinking, oh, this is a little like a female Napoleon Dynamite meets Stepford Wives. I mean, of course, it's so much more than that.
Well, we'll take that. Thank you.
It's so funny because when Napoleon Dynamite, of course, became so wildly popular for the independent movie that it was at the time.
And it also started from a short.
It did. That's right.
I saw it at Slam Dance.
Did you really?
A million years ago, yeah.
Oh, that is so rad. Yeah. But Napoleon Dynamite is something that... I think it was our first day of shooting. We, we're, you know, cruising through our day, and we had these kind of, like, older union sound guys that we noticed were laughing a lot during our takes, and at the end of the day, we started, like, shooting the shit with them and being like, oh, who are you guys? And they were like, man, we had no idea what this project was. Like, but they were like, it seems really weird, but after today, like, it's so, you know, whatever, fucking funny that we're sitting here thinking we're making the next Napoleon Dynamite. And, like, that couldn't have been a better thing for us to hear on our first day of shooting, because we were like, hell yeah, maybe there's some promise here.
Well, of course, it's a comedy, and I kept thinking, sort of through the first, you know, 30 minutes or so, this world is so surreal. And then, the longer I watched it, the more it dawned on me, it's not really surreal. It's more speaking truth, because then I can't help but think about our president and the White House, and like, we have kids in cages, and that's okay with everybody apparently. And sure, my kid just turned into a dog, you know, like there's all these weird things that happen in the movie, and it's just taken for normal. And I feel like it's a real reflection of the reality we're living in 2019, unfortunately.
Yes. Thank you for reading that into it. And that was absolutely our intention behind writing it. It couldn't be more a product of the sociopolitical climate that it was written within, for sure.
In fact, one thing we talked about with all of our designers going into it was we wanted this to be a timeless suburbia, we wanted the design elements to all tap into the eras of the 1950s and the 1980s,
including the music.
The music as well, these kind of periods of economic prosperity and social conservatism when, you know, America was quote unquote great, with these seeds of rebellion coming through. And yeah, it was not a coincidence that we were leaning a bit into the
Well, I can definitely darkness. Say, yeah, the darkness. It's definitely a movie of today. And then there's, you know, one of you is married to Beck Bennett's character.
My character, yes.
Okay, great, yeah. And he's drinking the pool water.
Yeah.
Which, if you live in Flint, Michigan, it's probably a great idea.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just all the little details, you know, just really dawned on me. Like, wow, we're in sort of living in this post-truth, post-reality time period that I certainly couldn't have imagined coming my way.
Yeah.
Your child turns into a dog.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. You know, one of the biggest things we were exploring with this movie was identity. And of course, we don't have social media in the movie as actual tools, but all of those themes of basically how much your identity is established by what you're projecting on the outside, by who your family is, who your children are, what other people tell you that you are. And our characters are so little are tapped into what they actually want and how they actually feel. And I think with Julian, the kids actually do have more of an identity than the adults, yet he's so constantly bombarded with this energy that who he is specifically is not right. And his parents, you know, aren't happy with whatever. He's like a square peg in a round hole, exactly. And I think you can look at his dog transformation in many different ways. I mean, it happens on his dad's birthday. Almost, it can be looked at as an offering to his dad. And I think, you know, you can think about like little boys who love like jazz dance and hip hop class, for example, whose dads really want them to play football and play sports. And it's so incredibly common. And I could list 100 examples of children not being who their parents thought they were going to be. And I think we can also look at it so far into this. I'm sure you notice in our movie, we have very binary gender roles. It's the boys in blue and the girls in pink. And I think Beck's line in when he's talking about, how do you think it makes Julian feel when he sees all these pictures of him in the house that don't look anything like him anymore? And it makes me think about possibly even transgender children who, you know, of course, their baby pictures are all over the house of them being little girls or little boys, and then that's not how they identify. And the parents deal with that in many different ways. And so we could go on, but those are some of our thoughts surrounding the dog.
Oh,
the lights just went out.
Just went out. I should tell.
Okay. It must be a sensor. We just have to move around every now and then.
I should tell my listeners we're in this strange room at the New Art Theater in LA, and it's got, I see a coffin, fake dumbbells, man's shoes.
I think we're surrounded by costumes and props for the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Ah,
that's right. And it's
kind of an ideal setting to be doing this interview.
The lots of the big downturn lips, which are, we have big upturn lips for our key art, so it's very fun. Yeah.
Your character, Jocelyn, gives away your baby.
That's right.
And what was that like? Do you have kids? Did that
not
impact
anymore.
You?
No.
Right, not anymore. Well, I think on the surface, the Jill giving away her baby, I think, can seem so absurd, especially at the beginning of the movie, you know, when you're just dropping into this world. But I mean, that, for us, that moment of Jill giving away the baby is, we're so much tapping into something that is so sadly very common, which is people making huge life decisions because of what they think will make someone else happy, because of what they're feeling from the outside that other people want. And we all know this, decisions of what your career is going to be, who you're going to marry, even whether or not you have a baby. And so that's definitely one of the things we wanted to tap into there.
Yeah, that was sort of a big moment for me. I was like, when that happened, I thought, oh, and then, and your character, Dawn, takes it. This, I just knew I was in for a really wild ride, right?
Yeah. And we knew that was so important to put at the very beginning of the film for that reason, that it's like, we just want, you know, like a roller coaster, you to be like locked in and on your way up.
So this film has been playing at festivals as well?
It has, yeah. We premiered at Sundance back in January and have done, I want to say, around 20 or so U.S. festivals. And then we made our international premiere in Locarno in August and have done a handful of festivals in Europe. And our sort of our international festival run is in its early days.
So what's next for you guys? What opportunities are coming to you as a result of this movie?
Oh, thanks. Well, we're writing our next movie.
You're writing your next movie.
Uh-huh. We are. We're so excited about it. One of our very favorite things to do, this might not be a surprise, but is world building. And we do so much of that in the early stages of our projects. And that is what we're doing right now and just having so much fun.
Yes.
So did you enjoy directing yourselves?
You know, that's how we work, and we're very used to it. So I think enjoy is a funny word, but we do like working that way. And we also like working directing other actors, of course.
Yeah.
Maybe enjoy that more.
Yeah.
Does one of you have, like, I'll be in charge of the camera shots, and I'll be in charge of the actors, or how does that work between you two?
Not really. We really both weigh in equally, I would say, across the board. You know, of course, we're always aware that each department head or each actor is only getting one note, like one set of notes from someone. We are aware, we don't want to all come at a person with two different notes, so we take turns, I would say, but we're both actively involved in everything.
Yeah.
Are there any funny stories from set that you can share?
Oh my gosh, I feel like so many.
I know. You know what one I'm thinking of is the Julian falling story.
Oh, well, Julian Hilliard, who plays my son in the movie, is just he's such a spectacularly talented actor. And I think he was only 7 when he was shooting our movie. But he took the role so seriously. And one thing we thought was so funny is, so Julian, you know, falls into the pool right before he turns into a dog. And when he falls, we really wanted him to fall like a plank. So their planking was kind of popular on YouTube. So we showed Julian lots of planking videos and we're like, yeah, you're gonna fall like this. And he said, that's great. And we had a hotel, a pool where we were all living in this hotel. And he would practice that fall at the pool all the time. And when it came time to shoot it, he nailed it. The first take is what's in the movie. We only did it once. And it was perfect. And then a couple weeks later, we went to shoot the opening soccer scene. And in that scene, Julian gets, you know, kind of hit by Bob in the shoulder and then falls on the soccer field. So, you know, we're rolling the camera, we like tell Julian, blah, 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 and then you like fall right here. And we start to go, and when Julian gets hit, he starts to fall into the grass like a plank, basically face first. And we were like, cut, cut, Julian, stop. Like, and we were like, Julian, you don't have to fall like that. And then he was like, but that's how Julian falls.
That's when we fully understood what a dedicated actor that little boy was.
He thought of it so deeply. Yeah.
That's great. So a lot of my listeners do write screenplays that are independent comedies. What advice do you have for them if they want to get their feature film made?
Oh, man. A couple quick things come to mind. One is finish it. Like, it's, I feel like we talk to so many screenwriters, and we've been screenwriters that are tossing around so many scripts, but we joke sometimes, like, that crappy movies get made because those are the people who finished it and, like, yes. And pursued it. So, like, you guys with your unique, incredible ideas, finish your scripts. And then I would say on that note, too, about you your own unique voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some feedback we've gotten about our movie that we've been just so happy and elated when we hear this is that this is unlike anything people have seen or different than what's out there. And I think it comes from us just trusting our voice and being okay with the fact that it might not be similar to, you know, the Avengers.
And I think, too, it's trusting what we think is funny. Like, I hate to say, but I think, like, no one thinks Greenergrass is as funny as Dawn and I do. And I think that is an important thing to hear as a writer, because so much of, I feel like, what I was doing in the past trying to develop things is, like, try to develop what would sell. But with Greener Grass, because we had the budget, we could shoot as soon as we were ready. And in that way, we were writing just a blueprint for a movie, and we weren't trying to sell anything we thought people would like to finance it. But, of course, not everyone's in that position. But we would say that, like, I hope financiers will take a risk on unique things when they come across them. So trust your own voice and make something you think rocks.
Great. Well, I wish you the absolute best with Greener Grass.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you're about to go in and do a Q&A with tonight's audience.
We are. We're excited.
And I hope everybody goes to see it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for really having us. And yes.
Take care.
Okay, you too.